Okay, now that I'm back on the agenda where I'm supposed to be, I think we are at paper 10.
Yep.
Caps and floors.
Thanks, Wayne.
You may not thank me when you're done.
Agenda paper 10 continues the discussion of Interpretations Committee's tentative agenda decision in January regarding an instrument with an obligation to deliver a variable number of its own equity instruments subject to a cap and a floor, which limits and guarantees the number of equity instruments to be delivered. The tentative agenda decision of the committee in January was not to add this issue to the committee's agenda, and that the instrument is a non-derivative instrument that meets the definition of a liability in IAS 32 in its entirety. The Interpretations Committee received 8 comment letters. Most of the comment letters supported the committee's decision not to add the issue to its agenda. However, there were some comments regarding the wording, and there were some suggestions about different interpretations of the words in IAS 32. A couple of comment letters also commented on IAS 32 in general and the way the committee has been addressing some of the issues in IAS 32 on a case-by-case basis. In paragraph 16 to 28, we analyze the comments of the comment letters. In our view, the obligation in the instrument meets the definition of a liability in its entirety. Therefore, we agree with some of the views in the comment letters that those last two sentences in the second paragraph of the tentative agenda decision are not needed. We think there is a single obligation, and that single obligation is settled with a variable number of shares, and therefore it meets the definition of a liability under IAS 32. We don't agree that you can apply paragraph 28 to split that obligation into two separate components, and in doing so to find an equity component. We think that you can only apply paragraph 28 if only part of the instrument meets that definition, and there's an additional part that doesn't, and then you can look at that additional bit and see whether that also meets the definition of a liability or whether that's equity. We don't think that's the case here, because the definitions in IAS 32 do not apply any limits on the extent of variability. It is simply that there is some variability and that it is not fixed, and therefore it is not an equity component. We have made amendments to the tentative agenda decision in the appendix, and we recommend that the Interpretations Committee confirm its tentative agenda decision on that basis. Any comments?
Comments? Going once, going twice. Charlotte jumped in first.
I think my concern is not that I disagree with the decision, but I think there is considerable diversity in practice. I know we had this issue come up internally while looking at external clients, and the bankers did some research and came up with a number of examples just in the last few years where people have got to come to different conclusions or either bifurcating or what they refer to as trifurcating different components out of it. And it seemed to be accepted that there were alternative views. And it was actually quoted to me, it was evidence that IAS 32 was subjective and there were interpretations were available. So my concern is by doing this, you're going to change practice in a number of areas, and it doesn't seem to be considering that.
Andrew?
I agree with the answer in this draft decision. In the redrafting, I also agree with removing the references to mutually exclusive settlement outcomes, because any instrument can only be settled once, so therefore different outcomes are by definition mutually exclusive. In every case, that's not a differentiating or a decisive factor. But the paper says that the instrument as a whole meets the definition of liability, but the requirement in IS 32 is to classify the instrument or its components based on the definition. And this redrafted decision really doesn't in any way address the question of whether this instrument has more than one component for the purpose of classification. And I think that is the key to the issue. And I personally completely agree that if you've got an instrument that can be settled in 80 shares or 130 shares or somewhere in between, you should not split that, for example, into a minimum fixed amount of 80 and variability for the rest. But I'm not sure the draft decision gives us the clarity we need without saying that more directly than it now does.
Well, the topic sentence of the second paragraph says meets the definition in its entirety.
But why? I'm saying, don't we classify the instrument or its components based on the definition? So we need to identify whether there's more than one component before we get to applying the definition.
I think I tried to change, because the previous tentative agenda decision talked about the instrument, and I tried to change the language to talk about the obligation. Mm-hmm. And the obligation that is the subject of the decision is the obligation to deliver a variable number of shares subject to a cap and a floor. So it's that obligation in its entirety that meets the definition of a liability. There might be other features to the instrument that might be components, but that in itself is not a component because it meets the definition of a liability.
Isn't that the wrong way around, though? You identify components and then you decide whether they meet the definition of equity or liability. If there's only one component, you apply the definition to that component in its entirety, but we seem to be just jumping the first step.
But I think you can only look under 32. I don't think you can look at an instrument and decide its components. You need to look at the obligation and see whether that obligation meets the definition of a liability in 32. If it does in its entirety, then it's a liability. However, if it doesn't in its entirety, then there might be another component that might meet another part of the definition, or it might meet the definition of equity.
Okay, let's move on and see what others can bring to this. Reinhard?
My comment is similar to what Andrew said. I mean, I agree with the agenda decision, but it doesn't clearly distinguish why you can't subdivide. And I think, Manuel, when you described the paragraphs that talked to the comment letters, you said something that important, at least in my mind, that was missing from the agenda decision, which was that the contractual substance is that there's a single obligation to deliver a variable number of shares. And I think that's in my mind is critical to saying why you can't subdivide it. And so that was one of my suggestion, to add that concept in here, because that'll help clarify why it's a liability in its entirety, but also why you cannot subdivide.
Okay. You just volunteered to be on the writing team. Tony?
I was going to say much the same thing. It just seems to me that the focus is on, in IS 32, is on the settlement. And in this case, there is just an obligation that's going to be settled in a variable number of shares. And I think if that was clear, then that would support the why. And yeah, I completely agree with where the staff has got to in terms of the conclusion.
Scott?
Okay. I thought that the staff paper made clear why you don't componentize this. I don't know if the agenda decision does, but I thought the paper very clearly articulated that the first thing IAS 32 requires you to do is identify the obligations. If those obligations that meet the definition of a liability take care of the whole instrument, you're done. For example, in a piece of convertible debt, the obligation that meets the definition of liability is the cash settlement. And that may not cover the entire value of the instrument because there may be an equity option on top of that. And therefore, you have an additional equity component. Of course, if the conversion option can be settled in cash, then it would be a second liability component. But I thought the staff paper actually made that clear. To some extent, we've all been poisoned by bifurcation under IAS 39, and we are trained to look for pieces that look like liabilities and pieces that look like equity and split them up because they have different risks, but that's not what 32 does, even though it is what 39 does. So I think we're a little bit, we've been taken over by the think that's in 39 to try to bifurcate everything. So I don't know if there's words that we could add to the agenda decision to bring that forth, but I thought the staff paper made it clear. I do note that those who think there's an equity instrument here can achieve the same economics and get an equity instrument by issuing this thing in two instruments, as long as they're legally separable and all of that, they're going to be accounted for separately, and they can achieve part of that by, you know, having the instruments be a fixed settlement in 80 shares plus, you know, some sort of put option or call option on the rest. And if they're freestanding instruments, well, then we're going to wind up accounting for them separately. I don't suggest we write that in the agenda decision, but it does seem that, you know, although we can look at this and say this is a liability, and I think that IAS 32 supports that, the people who engineer these kinds of instruments will, I suspect, quickly find a way around it to get to the desired accounting, because once you actually make them separate freestanding instruments, I don't think there's anything that would force you to artificially combine them for the accounting.
I would observe that 32, more than any of our standards, is contract driven.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about how you analyze a contract. It's not how you do much of anything. John?
I think similar to some of the others, I mean, I think the agenda decision wording sort of lacks two things. One, the sort of the process by which the thinking as to that's behind a conclusion, and the reasons, you know, linked back to the standard for the conclusion. It makes a statement that the issuer's obligation to deliver a variable number of the entity's own equity instruments is a non-derivative and meets the definition of a liability in its entirety, but it doesn't sort of explain why that's the first step that you take, so similar to Andrew's point. So I think more of what's in the paper needs to be built into the agenda decision to sort of explain the thinking and the rationale, supported by, I mean, one of the issues we raised in the non-viability clause issue, one of the concerns that was raised by respondents on that separate issue was, how are you supposed to read IAS 32? How, you know, do you read it in sort of a paragraph number order, and do you do the things at the beginning first, and then only if you go through those gates do you deal with the later paragraphs, or do you go straight to compound instrument accounting because you can identify an equity component? There's elements of that same discussion, which I think it was unresolved in our discussion on non-viability clauses. There's elements of that here. And I think some people might say, well, I look for the components first, and then I look to how I account for them under IAS 32. Mm-hmm. That's not what's proposed here. What's proposed is you say, I look for my obligations, it's a liability and it's an entirety, therefore there is no equity component, so I don't go anywhere near paragraph 28. I mean, I can accept that as an acceptable interpretation of 32. I do think there are other interpretations. But that logic to me needs to go through the agenda decision.
So I think we're suggesting maybe two sentences, three, to accomplish that. I don't think we need to write a whole treatise on it. I jocularly suggested that Reinhardt had volunteered to help in drafting. I won't commit him to that, but I think it would be helpful for a couple of folks to maybe take a look at what Manuel comes up with before we get it to update. I'd like this to make update. Yeah. Do I have a couple of volunteers? Andrew and Reinhardt and John. Three volunteers. Okay, that's what we'll do. Any objection to that? Okay.
Thank you.